This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 30. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network, and I am your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley, the man who is absolutely sick of staring at his computer monitor. I am Jacob Paulson.
Jacob is the guy who has read four biographies about George Washington. And we are also joined today by Brandon Scott. And Brandon is the guy who perfectly can sing our intro music to the podcast.
It's true. And I do it every time that I'm on. And I want you to know that as a listener to the podcast, Riley has deprived you of the premium opportunity of listening to me perfectly replicate the USA Firearm Training Podcast theme song.
Now is your chance, good
now
sir.
Now is the chance. It goes. It just goes a little something like this.
I think we're just going to replace the intro music with Brandon's version forever and ever.
I doubt anyone would know the difference.
I can't believe you've been editing that out all these times.
Oh, boy. Well, it's just so good. Like, I can't tell the difference between the recording and Brandon's version, you know?
Maybe it has been in there. The world may never know.
So, a few episodes ago, Jacob's inspiration was to include a This Day in History sort of thing. And I couldn't help myself but to throw that into this episode as well. So, on this day, and this episode is the weekly Wednesday episode where we talk about a major topic in concealed carry or firearms land. So on June 29th, 1776, Edward Rutledge expressed his opposition to colonial independence. Most of
or
you probably
at least
don't.
The timing of it.
Correct.
To his defense.
So most of you probably don't even know who Edward Rutledge is. He is one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, which, as you should know, anyone that put their name on that document, yeah, there was a good chance that the Brits were going to come and hang him or shoot him or do something to him because they were really putting their lives on the line by signing that document and declaring our independence. And Edward, he had an older brother, I believe it was, John Jay, the name. And they were both, they had very similar interests and very similar career paths, even to an extent. They both served in government. And in a letter to his brother, Edward expressed his opposition to moving forward with colonial independence at that time. But eventually, the point is...
Well, think of how scary it was.
Oh, crap,
know?
Yes.
I mean, yes. You know, think about something that's, try and come up with... And I don't have anything off the top of my head, so I shouldn't have brought it up. But, like, think of how scary that was back then to... I mean, what they were talking about was monumental.
Yeah.
Treason.
Yeah. And let's put this in context, by the way, because on this day, June 29th, 1776, he writes this letter. He says, I'm not okay with this right now. But then, like, what, 6 days later, July 4th, you know, Independence Day, that's when, like, it became official, baby, you know? So, like, he eventually was swayed. He eventually, you know...
Debatably said, July 2nd, it was official, but...
Yeah, well, right.
Just
but
to split some hairs here.
I couldn't help myself since we are approaching our Independence Day, Jacob.
There you go. So everybody go study Edward Rutledge, but if you really want like your mind blown, go study John Jay, because that dude is the shiz.
Yep, John Jay was the man. And so ultimately we know how history wrote itself. And by the way, just in case, because I didn't mention it, Edward Rutledge was representative from South Carolina, which was one of the latter states to finally go along with this. So awesome, fantastic. Also June 29th, not 1776, but 1972. I just thought this was of interest. The Supreme Court struck down the death penalty. So, you know, and so a 5-4 vote. And at that time, the Supreme Court kind of leaned a little bit liberal. And so it was kind of a lesson that, you know, the Supreme Court justices have, you know, and who is picked for those jobs, it has a huge impact. And so in Furman versus Georgia, They ruled by a vote of 5-4 that capital punishment, as it was currently employed on the state and federal level, was unconstitutional. Now, eventually...
Interesting.
Yeah. And eventually, capital punishment resumed, but only after Congress kind of put together some rules and ways that it could be done without it being considered cruel and unusual punishment. And so in 1976, with 66% of Americans, and I think that number's gone down slightly now, but Americans still supporting capital punishment, the Supreme Court acknowledged progress made, and in 1977, Gary Gilmore, a famous violent criminal in Utah, was executed. And his is kind of notable because, you know, and in those days in particular, you know, the convict, the, you know, they could say, they could have a say in the method that was used. And he's like, firing squad. So the first execution for after a number of years that took place was Gary Gilmore in Utah by firing squad. And his last words to his executioners was, "Let's do it. Bring it on."
Good riddance.
Indeed. But kind of fun and interesting to listen to. Today's topic is the CCWers restroom break. Yeah, that'll be fun. We're going to cover so many things, and I know you guys are going to have some stories. Brandon in particular.
I've got some good ones, some doozies.
Oh, yes. It's a place we must frequent every day of our lives, unless you're superhuman. The restroom.
You know, fun fact.
What's that?
Kim Jong-il. Is it Un or Il? Yeah, Kim Jong-il has no reason, no need for the restroom. He processes his food so efficiently that there is no waste, and so he does not require the use of
him and Chuck Norris, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know who'd win that fight. So here's why we're talking about this. Typically far from the beginning CCWer's mind until their first trip to the restroom when carrying a gun is how to handle a firearm and or holster when resting their cheeks on the white porcelain throne. We're going to break this down and discuss at length tips and tricks and strategies for how to do this safely and efficiently on the Concealed Carry Podcast. But first, today's episode is sponsored by the Brave Response Holster. Stay tuned for a special product message later on in the episode. So without further ado, let's get into the topic.
Yeah.
The CCWers restroom break. And to set the stage, Jacob, a little while back, you wrote an article called Using a Restroom or a Bathroom with a Concealed Carry Handgun. And
yeah,
talk about a lot of strategies.
One thing that I
want to
just paint the picture a little bit here is when we talk about going to the bathroom with a gun, we're not just talking about what do I do with the gun. We're also, as part of this conversation, we also need to talk about what if I have to tactically respond to a threat while I'm sitting on the porcelain throne, as you called it, Riley. So there's a balance here, not just of safety, but also of tactical preparedness.
Yeah, absolutely. That is an important component, of course. I mean, could you be attacked in a bathroom? Well, yeah, probably. Has it been documented
in the
bathroom?
News? Not
that I
could
found
be
yet,
in saying,
but I'm looking for that story.
Someone's in this nightclub shooting people. So it may not be that the attack comes in the bathroom, but that you happen to be there when the threat starts.
Yeah. That's a little recent in the mind, but you're right, absolutely right. And I do in fact wish that people even in bathrooms were always able to defend themselves with a weapon. What are some of the challenges with carrying concealed and needing
I think to
me, take
like,
a restroom
one
break?
One of the biggest challenges, I'm just thinking back, in the beginning for me, when I had those first few experiences of crap, what do I do with this thing? The weight to me was a big issue, right? It's like, well, if I leave the gun in its holster on my pant and I drop my pants, the gun is so heavy, like it becomes something I can't control. Like, I can't really control that gun because it's just flip-flopping, falling, seems almost like in a free fall. So that was, that's one of the major, concerns is just like these things are heavy and attached to your pants, they're just going to drop like a rock.
funny that you brought that up, because my first story of the day,
yeah, and they really depend,
is exactly that. So I was carrying a Glock 27, the 40 caliber subcompact Glock, in an Uncle Mike's holster, just one of those, you know, neoprene pouches with a plastic clip on it at 4 o'clock. And I go into a public restroom.
Oh, classic.
I'm trying to remember where I was. Like I could pick out the color of the tile, but I can't remember where exactly I was. But as I undo my pants to have a seat for a minute, the gun is so heavy, it weighed down on my belt, and it just flopped over. And of course, there's no retention on the Uncle Mike's holster, and so it just slid out. And I was brand new to concealed carrying, literally like within the first 3 weeks. And you know, I didn't understand too much about firearms. I didn't, you know, like I still knew. And I vividly remember staring down the barrel of my firearm as it's falling perfectly on the very back. Like it's just like exactly pointed straight at my face as it's about to fall. And, you know, and I you know, my pants are off, and I duck for cover and realize, oh, it's not like the movies. It didn't just go off and blow my head off. But,
You know, as a Glock armor, I could tell you that there's at least three safety devices.
And
that
was like part of why I bought a Glock. That, and because, you know, a guy that I really admired, he said that was the right gun for me. And I was like, yes, I'll do whatever. That's fine. Great. You know, and I don't know. You know, I was hard pressed at the time to even name those three safeties. And so as a Glock armorer, I challenge you to name those three safeties. Yeah.
What? Called out.
Yeah, do it.
Right now? Oh, okay. Well, yeah. All right. So first up, we've got the firing pin safety. Okay. Which is, you know, that's a big one right there as far as keeping the firing pin from actually passing through and, you know, coming in contact
block,
with
right?
the primer of the loaded cartridge. Next up. Yeah. It's literally a little plunger device that sits, you know, right there just in front of the firing pin and
it's
does
little
not
circle
allow
when you take apart
the
your Glock,
firing
pin
yeah. really to go anywhere. Okay. So, yep. So, and it's kind of cool because, you know, what deactivates that safety is the actual trigger bar. Okay, so the little bar that goes from your trigger all the way back to where it mates up with the catch or the sear on the firing pin, and you know the connector too, which is another part in the Glock. That trigger bar has a little kind of, I don't know, finger or whatever. I would just call it or refer to it as a finger. And as the trigger is pressed rearward, that thing pushes up on that little plunger device, which is the firing pin safety. So that's the first one. The next safety that I would probably mention is the drop safety. Okay. That's the, so the way that, yeah. You know, it's interesting because, I mean, we have the firing pin safety, which doesn't allow the firing pin to go through the channel and strike the primer until the trigger is pressed fully rearward. And that's kind of redundant to an extent with the drop safety. And the drop safety, what it is once again that trigger bar at the rear. It's got this little catch, right? And there's an important component there that Glock refers to as the cruciform. And so if you look at it, it kind of does look like a little kind of cross-shaped metal piece. And that rests on what they refer to as the trigger shelf. Yeah, I think I'm referring to that correctly. So there's a shelf device. So that cruciform sits on top of the shelf. As the trigger bar is pressed to the rear, once again moved because of the action of the trigger, it slides across that shelf, but it can't, it must get completely past that shelf before it allows it to drop and fall. And that actually is what releases the little sear or catch on the firing pin, allows it to go forward. Okay, so that drop safety, really what it is it's where the trigger bar mates up with the catch or the sear of the firing pin, and the firing pin cannot move past it either until the trigger bar moves fully rearward, which is when the trigger is pressed fully rearward. And so then finally, the third safety, which once again is kind of redundant here because it relates to these other two things I just talked about, is the trigger safety, which is that little hinged
it's actually part
device
of the trigger
that's
shoe.
Right there on the face of the trigger. And basically, correct. And so, you know, it basically requires typically a finger or something to actually depress that trigger safety before the trigger can be pressed and moved rearward. And so simply from being dropped, the gun is absolutely incapable of, I mean, like you could throw a Glock off the Empire State Building and it is not going to fire. Like yeah. it just can't happen really. Okay. I mean, you got these three safety devices. They're really passive safeties because you don't really have to think about or turn them on or off. You just, as part of firing the gun in its normal mode, you deactivate these safeties one by one. Okay, it's first the trigger safety is deactivated, the drop safety and the firing pin safety actually are kind of, they're a close second and third. Like they happen very close
awesome.
To each other.
I love it.
So there you go. There's three Glock
I had
safeties.
A conversation today. The reason I wanted to name him, a conversation today with a guy that like, it just, you know, everybody's heard three safeties, but like still for some reason people get so nervous about like, well, there, you know, there's not a little switch that I can turn on and off, but it's like, dude, that thing is, you know, the only safety that really matters is your pointer finger right there. Anyway,
sorry. Oh, yeah, always. So it's funny. I mean, we kind of got off on a tangent, but I think it was kind of a good tangent because Glock is a popular handgun. Many of our listeners, I'm sure, own or carry or are familiar with Glocks. So there you go. You've just been educated as far as, you know, what those three safety devices are, how they work. You're sitting down to use the restroom and do your business. The Glock falls out of the Uncle Mike's holster, which is by the way, the worst holster for this very thing. Those suckers guaranteed will flop
that's
out and drop your gun on the floor. Yeah. If you're using one of those. Yep. That's what everybody buys. Their very first holster guaranteed. I'll admit I did too. I was 21 years old or 22. Like I said, I think I was just past my 22nd birthday. I get my permit and you know, you're like, I need a holster. And you're like, I know nothing about holsters. I need to find a holster.
Exactly.
And so where do you go? You go to probably Walmart. And you're like, wow, that's only $10. Yeah, heck yeah, sign me up, you know. And then it lasts like a week and you're like, this thing sucks. So anyway, you found out in that instant that holster sucked. Then what happened?
I put it back in and I put it back in the holster, which I don't know why because I still had to sit down. But yeah, man, that freaked me out. I didn't carry for maybe a week or so after that because I was like, man, I can't have that happen ever again. I have to find a different solution.
Yeah. Yep. And so, you know, we've all kind of had similar stories. I mean, I haven't actually had my gun hit the floor, but I have definitely had some close calls. And but before we go any further, I got to throw something out there, folks. If your gun's falling, one of the worst things you could do is to try to juggle and catch it. Bad idea. Like you're just asking for your finger to somehow make its way through the trigger guard and depress the trigger and then bang. You know, like that's just bad idea. If a gun's falling, let it fall. I have had a gun fall, but it was still in its holster and I caught it. Okay. But I rec, you know, it was in the holster. The holster was kind of flopping over, and I was like, "Oh crap!" And I grabbed it. But if that gun had not been in the holster, I would have just let it fall. Okay, so yeah, Jacob, what's next? You know, like if we're talking about your article, you talked about you know tactics as well as you know relating to self defense in the restroom, but also
let's do this. Let's talk about the three.
You know, there's other things
big
there
too.
So what's next?
Don't do these things. Like these are the three things that I think are the biggest mistakes people make. Let's go here next. I think this would be a good flow. Yeah. Well, I think it's really critical.
I just mentioned the first one.
Well, that's actually not on my list, but
don't do
we
that.
Can say there's four
don't catch the
if
gun.
You want. But I think first step was don't let it fall to begin with. Anyway, so number one, do not remove the gun from the holster.
Yes.
I think a lot of people take the gun out of the holster and they're like, oh, okay, where do I set this gun? Mm-hmm. What do I do with this gun? Like, you know, you need to, if you're in a situation where you feel like you need to do something relatively like that, you need to remove the holster as well. Yeah. Like, there's no reason to remove the gun from the holster. The better tactic would be to just keep the gun in the holster and remove the holster, because the holster keeps the gun safe. So that if anything like that happens, you're in a far better position. So number one is, do not take that gun out of its holster unless you have to, like, you know, tactically draw it in for a threat.
And not only in the bathroom, but that, I mean, that needs to apply to everyday life. Like, you know, I always feel bad for guys that live in a state where they're not allowed to carry anywhere. And so they're constantly taking the gun out and putting it in, taking the gun out and putting it in. And again, whenever I have the opportunity to chat with, a customer on the phone that has had that experience, it's always, you know, you have to take that minute and let them know that, hey, you know, it sucks that your state doesn't allow you to carry in these places and that you're running these errands, but, you know, you don't get in the habit of just taking that gun out and putting it in, putting it in your glove box or putting it in your center console or anything like that, and then putting it back in your holster. I mean, the more you're fooling around with the firearm, the more you're opening up yourself to have a negligent discharge.
Absolutely. And have you guys seen the video of, I believe it was an Indiana police officer, a lieutenant, basically a career guy in the
oh,
in law,
yes,
enforcement.
USA Today.
And
yeah, it's
the video
our
where he's
somewhere.
In the elevator with his wife, right? Yep. Yeah, I know it is. And that's a video I absolutely share in every handgun safety course or concealed carry course that I teach now. And the lesson that goes with that is, like, yeah, Brandon's talking about, do not remove the gun from the holster. Like, just don't. Like, especially when you're out and about, when you're in a public place, when you're in a restroom, when you're in an elevator, when you're in your car even. It's a recipe for disaster, because every time you pull that gun out of that holster, like the really dangerous time is when you're trying to get it back into the holster. A lot of things can get in the way. A finger can get in the way if you're not careful. A button from a coat. Some zip, like the pull. You know, like how a lot of zippers on jackets nowadays have the little pull attached to it, right? The little string or paracord sometimes. You know, this is an issue even on the range, working with people on the range. If it's cold weather and they're wearing a jacket, and sometimes I'll see these coats with the pockets and they've got that little pull tag attached to the zipper. And I'm like, you got to zip that up and make sure it's away from your holster. If you can, tuck it inside the pocket, zip it up, whatever, because that is a potential, negligent discharge right there. And so but coming back to where we started with this,
if I could add one more thing,
keep
really
the gun
quick
in the holster.
I want to put on my Jacob Paulson hat, and say what he's probably thinking and what he said before. Right now, your brain is telling you that this is not your problem, and that what you do is okay. But take a minute to really understand what we're saying here. The more the gun is out of the holster, the higher the risk you have of a negligent discharge. And, well, I always keep my finger index on the frame of the firearm. Well, I take it from this holster that's on my waist and I put it into a holster that's on the car, or I take it from the holster that's in my waist and I put it in a safe that's in the car. I put it in a cup holder and it's, there's nothing near the trigger guard. I mean, like Jacob says all the time, right now, if this is a habit that you're in, your brain is telling you that it's okay for you to have this habit, but it's not. It's not okay to have this habit.
Self-justification. We're so good at it.
Cognitive dissonance.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Nice, dude. Well played.
Well, well said and well played. It's like this police officer, and I didn't finish telling the story in case some of our listeners, aren't familiar with, and maybe we can add this video to our show notes or something. But so we have a police officer, he's in an elevator, and this is my viewpoint of it. If you watch his body language, he looks like he's tired and uncomfortable. And like this gun is causing him pain. It's been in there. It's pinching something, something like that. And so what does he do? He pulls it out of the holster. You know, he's in the elevator with his wife alone. They've got to go down, I don't know, several floors. Apparently he thinks he has enough time to do this. Pulls it out of the holster. And it kind of appears he's trying to get it into the pocket of his jacket so he can just make his way home and, you know, be done with it. And at some point, from what I understand or from what I could see, it seems like a button from the coat goes into the trigger guard, snags the trigger, and the gun fires. It ricochets off the elevator door and then the elevator wall. Basically, it makes a 90 degree and a 90 degree.
Whoa.
So it now comes back at 180 degrees and nails him in the gut. Yeah, crazy story, right? And so that's the danger. That's the video I share in every class now. And it's like, if you're especially out in public or anywhere other than home, if you got to take the gun off, take it off with the holster. And I know sometimes that's a pain in the butt, but do it, because that holster is what keeps you and everybody else around you safe when you are away from home. And even at home, it's not a bad practice. And I'll frequently, you know, say, and especially if we got a student that's an apartment dweller and like they don't have like a good safe direction that they can keep a gun pointed while they're, you know, loading, unloading, you know, whatever it is in their apartment or in some homes or whatever, I'll say, okay, get a good safe, a good quality, heavy gauge, heavy duty safe. Keep the gun stored in there. You know, you're getting ready for the day. Open up the safe. Pull the gun out. Keep the muzzle basically right there, you know, pointed into the opening of the safe. Grab your holster of choice, you know, and while you're careful not to muzzle your support hand, you know, just bring the holster in front, slip it onto the gun. Now you got the gun in a holster where the trigger and the trigger guard is protected. Then put the holster and gun together on, you know, onto your waist or your waistband or whatever it is. So that's the suggestion. So anyway. Jacob, major do nots. Do
unless
not remove the gun from the holster.
Respond to a threat.
Unless, what did you say? Yeah. Required to respond.
Number two,
to
do
a threat.
Not set the gun down.
Very good.
Even in a holster. Anywhere you don't have control of it. And there's a lot of appealing places in a bathroom, right? Back of the toilet, top of the toilet paper dispenser, you know, all those kinds of things. Placing the firearm in those places has a lot of potential issues. One, it jeopardizes your ability to retrieve it quickly in an emergency. Right? I mean, can you actually access it quickly and draw? And two, it also maximizes the possibility you're going to forget it altogether. Like you're just going to walk right out, which, by the way, click through to the article in the show notes that we're talking about, because at the bottom of the article, we actually have a list of news stories. Most of these news stories are people forgetting guns in bathrooms, but they're all relevant to guns in bathrooms. And so, yeah, it also happens to be that most of these surfaces are very slippery. You know, that toilet paper dispenser, the back of the toilet, they're not that good at keeping guns from sliding. So just don't set it down anywhere.
Brandon, story number two.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
Yep.
So I was going to school, and I had stopped between classes, and I go to sit down in the last stall, and sure enough, right there, somebody's gun is in between the handrail, resting on top of the toilet paper dispenser. And in that moment, I was like, you know, this is a lucky duck that it's me sitting here and not somebody else.
I thought you were going to say you were a lucky duck that you just got a free gun.
That would be a way better story. No, I called campus security and the campus police, and they came and they took control of it. So,
wow.
Super embarrassing. Super, like,
how embarrassing
could you imagine,
for that individual?
Like, it might be worth just buying a new gun than having to go down to the dang police station to pick it up. Gosh. I've also had Brandon's story number three sitting in a stall. I'm sitting there and it was strange because, you know, like it wasn't a crowded bathroom at all. And there were three stalls, but for some reason, the next guy to come into the restroom, he chose the stall immediately adjacent to mine. And like, usually, you know, do you guys understand that there's like a buffer rule, like an unspoken, Or is that just me? Maybe I'm just weird. I don't know.
So at least with urinals, I'd say for sure. I don't know if I ever thought about stalls, but continue.
Anyway.
So, well, like you're sitting right next to the dude, like you're smelling his butt, you're smelling your butt, like it's just no good. But anyway, so I'm sitting there, and you know the guy's like fidgeting, you know, around, and all of a sudden this gun comes bouncing into my stall, and I'm just like I said a bad word. And he's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so, like, oh, can you kick that over to me, man? Like, I'm just like, can I kick that over to you? Are you joking me right now, man? Like, you're lucky that it's me, man, because had this been anybody else, this would have been a big, big problem."
Oh, that's classic.
He asked me to kick it back to him.
Oh, wow.
Kick it back to
that's
you.
That's a great story.
You
spend too much time in public bathrooms, or you are a huge outlier.
Well, yeah, I have no qualms about a public restroom. Like if I've got to go, like I don't care. You know, it's just I've remained STD free my whole entire life.
Yeah,
yeah, everybody. Yeah,
and you're in Utah, where everybody carries, right? Right. But okay, so do not number two, do not set it down anywhere. And I think the key here is that you do not have control.
I think
over it.
In
so,
your lap.
So where might you
potentially
have
in your pants? You know, I've seen that meme going around the internet where you know dude's got his holster kind of off of his belt, but sitting in his pants. You know, between his legs. You know, in your hand. You know, the key is probably it's still within your immediate possession. If it's not on you, you probably don't have control over it.
Yep. One of my favorite locations is honestly like, cradled kind of like in my pants. Like that's just the way I've always done it. You know, it's like, it's easy to do if you, particularly with your classic inside waistband Kydex holster with the clips, you know, like you can loosen your pants, start dropping them. You can unclip your holster. And as the pants go down, you just sort of, you know, swing and move your gun into your pants, and nobody can see it. It's secure. It's in between your legs. I could still reach down there and retrieve it and use it quickly if I had to. So that's kind of, you know, prior to me finding some other holster options, that was probably, you know, the way I did it with the classic,
hybrid Kydex
leather
go.
Holster.
With other holster options. So
I was reading your mind.
The day that I found out, like, so we, my brother and I, we decide, okay, we're going to start developing this new concealed carry holster. And I don't know if you've heard about, if you've heard me talk about the Brave Response holster in the past, maybe once or twice.
What is that?
It sounds interesting. Tell me more. So we start saying, you know, there's got to be a better way, right? And so we start with one of the really, really early prototypes that we were testing. I will never forget the day that I realized the number one, in my opinion, the number one most important selling point of the Brave Response holster. I went to go take it off. Like I went to go release the Velcro and take it off and set it in my lap. And it occurred to me in that moment that I don't have to take this thing off at all. I can just pull it up onto my, you know, onto my torso. It's completely out of the way. I could, if I really want, like if I've really got a job to do, I can rotate it to the back. So it's like, I've got arm freedom, you know, like I've got full range of motion.
if you really have a job to do, it's all
right there. It doesn't ever leave. It's not pointed in an unsafe direction. It's all self-contained. And that was when personally, that's when I knew, oh yeah, we have something here. This is a big deal. So
cool. Well, you know, thanks for sharing that with us. And I agree. I mean, that's, we may reference it more than once here in this episode today because of the nature of the episode. But yeah, of course, you know, I mean, you know, Brandon Scott, the creator of the Brave Response holster, that was one of the things I recognized right away with it was wow, like this solves some problems as far as that goes. That you're right. Like you do not have to remove this holster or the gun to take care of your business. And that's fantastic.
It's tactical safer, ready.
It's easier, it's faster, it's more convenient. Yeah. It's still right there. It's available for use. So lots of pluses, lots of bonuses as far as that goes. Where, you know, coming into a restroom and what do you do with your gun? There is one more do not that we haven't talked about yet. So I didn't want to, I want to make sure we didn't miss that. And we'll come back to, we're going to spend a little more time probably talking about maybe some holsters or tactics and things, but I wanted to get this out there. This one's kind of obvious though. Do not point the gun in an unsafe direction. Right? I mean, duh. It's one of the firearm safety rules, so don't do it. Don't point at yourself. That's a tricky one, right? Because you're trying to do your business in the restroom and you're trying to manipulate all this stuff, pants, holster, gun, whatever, other clothing items, and to not muzzle yourself can be tricky. Now, I don't worry about that as much if you follow the other advice that I mentioned earlier. Like if the gun is in the holster, it's secure in the holster, trigger is protected, I'm not like totally freaking out if, the gun's not totally, I don't know. It's not like I'm pointing at my neighbor, right? But I'm not pointing at my leg or my toes. But, the point is it's in the holster. It's secure. It's reasonably safe as far as that's concerned. But it just goes as a general rule because it is a firearm.
I'll add one quick thing. I remember a news story that I'll never forget. This is actually from Brandon State. This is Utah. School teacher, I think it was a junior high or a high school, goes into a bathroom and the gun discharges and hits the toilet. And the shrapnel from the porcelain injures the teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like went out on a stretcher. Ambulance came.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so the toilet's also not a safe direction. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Wow. I've got a second Utah toilet. Everybody who listens to this podcast is going to think that all of us concealed carry permit holders in Utah were just like crazy gun-toting, bathroom shooting, just yahoos. But so that happened was it last summer or was it longer ago than
no
that?
It was longer ago, maybe okay. Even 3 years ago.
Was it that long ago?
I think. Holy, I have the news story right here, hold on. September 2014.
Oh wow, geez, time flies when you're having fun. So the other thing that that happened maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we had a gal down in Centerville, which is maybe, an hour or two south of Salt Lake City where we're at. And, she's in this Olive Garden and she's brand new concealed weapons permit holder. And she's in the bathroom and all of a sudden, there's this gunshot that goes off in the bathroom, and come to find out that this lady had shot down the toilet into the septic pipe. And there was just like filth everywhere.
Oh.
It was a bad deal. She shot and killed that toilet. And of course, the first thing out of her mouth, well, yeah, I was just, it just went off. And then a couple of days later, she admits, yeah, no, the gun did not just go off. I had pointed it at the toilet and pulled the trigger. So
pulled the trigger.
She intentionally fired it?
No, well, she just had her finger on the trigger.
Okay. It was still like, it was still an ND. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. She didn't like intentionally shoot the toilet, but like, I mean, a gun, we talked about the three safeties. I mean, most what's interesting, like, and one of the important things about going over those safety features in the Glock is that a lot of semi-automatic handguns have copied, pretty much verbatim, carbon copied the three internal safeties that Glock utilizes. And so like the whole point of me asking Riley to go through that is, number one, he has a great knowledge of it, but also it's so important to understand, like, guns don't just go off. Like, that doesn't happen. Guns go off when we as an operator, I don't want to use the word operator, that has a different kind of, I'm operating in the bathroom against the zombies.
Dude, you are so operator.
You're so operator right now, man. we as a concealed firearms permit holder and a CCW-er, however you
say
it.
That's right.
we are the ones that actuate these farms. I mean, you know, think about in the sue happy world where we can sue over hot coffee. You know, think about what a nightmare it would be if firearms companies manufactured firearms that just went off. Like,
right.
That is not a sustainable company. And so, you know, these guys are pretty dang serious about making sure that they design and release a gun that's not just going to go off. So, I mean, that's well, it's just
I can't help myself at this point to kind of throw Taurus under the bus with their recall a few months ago, you know, because they're some of their earlier generation guns, the so-called drop safety or firing pin safeties that were supposed to be built in those were malfunctioning, and guns were firing when they were dropped and sometimes even just shaken really hard, which is not good. And it's millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of guns that were recalled. Big issue there. So definitely it's not something.
And not only like the reputation, like, you know, somebody that reads that story, are they ever going to buy a Taurus ever?
No.
I mean, yeah, gun companies can't survive more than one of those. If they can survive one of those stories, they can't survive more than one of those stories.
Yep, totally.
I was about to make a Toyota reference, but then I remembered my rule about guns and cars.
Yep. So
let's talk more about holsters, because I think that was a worthwhile point. We talked a little bit about, you know, the Brave Response holster, which is, you know, obviously we're fans here, but it, you know, specific to going to the bathroom, super easy. Like, you know, undo waistband, pull up holster, do your business, pull holster back down, like close waistband, walk out. Right. But I think just quickly, if I can't think of a better way to do this. So I'm just going to kind of go through a list of different types of holsters and give you some bathroom thoughts along those lines. So I'm going to first talk a little bit about shoulder holsters and bra holsters. They make restroom trips also very painless. I mean, they're also very rare. Shoulder holsters are particularly rare in our industry. But, you know, shoulder holster, bra holster, similar to the Brave Response holster, is sort of like a little to minimal to no action required kind of thing. You know, it's still in the same place. Your draw is still the same. Your tactical readiness is the same. Nothing really needs to be done. Ankle holsters don't require any particular action to secure or remove the gun, but they do become very inaccessible when you drop your pants down around them.
They can.
Right? How are you going to draw that gun? Yeah, so unless you like go to some effort to kind of, you know, move the pant a little bit so you can still access the gun or whatever it is. So that's just a thought. If you're an ankle holster user, make sure that when you drop your pants down that you can still access that gun, you know, how you should be able to.
Riley, it sounded like you had a strategy.
With the ankle holster?
Yeah.
Am
I wrong?
I'm trying to think. Well, this is part of the article that we edited, I suggested to Jacob about this. So with the ankle holster, you know, I think the key is I've used an ankle holster in a limited capacity. For me, it's a backup gun type, you know, function. It's rare. Maybe a 2 or 3 times I've carried an ankle holster as a primary, you know, weapon carrying method. But you know, you got to drop your pants, drop them down, you know, but then as you sit down, you know, just take, you know, put your hands down there and just sort of, like Jacob, you kind of touched on it, you know, just push your pants down around the gun, get them below the gun, and, you know, you could see it right there. It should be right there. At least the ankle holsters I've used, you know, you've got kind of that little stirrup or whatever that goes up over the top of the calf. This is the type I prefer anyway, as opposed to the ones that are just a standalone, you know, strap, whatever that goes around your ankle. I don't care for those. I don't think they're that secure. So I'll use the type that has kind of that secondary stirrup strap over top of the calf. Those type, typically the ankle holster rides a little bit higher. And so the strap will be just above your calf. The holster and the gun itself will be like just below your calf, which is still, you know, a good couple of inches, maybe 6 inches or so above your actual ankle. And you could definitely, you know, push and shove your pants and, you know, manipulate them down to where they're below the holster and the gun. And it'll be totally exposed. You know, like it'll be right there where you can see it, you can access it. That actually, I think, works pretty well, because when you're in a sitting position, and this is one situation where ankle holsters make a lot of sense, I think, is if you are in a sitting position. So on the white porcelain throne, hey, totally works. In a vehicle, at a desk, anything like that, ankle holsters actually, in my opinion, make sense in those situations. all their situations is a backup option, in my opinion.
That's a great point. Like, you know, don't let your pants bunch up over the top of it.
Yep, exactly.
Yep.
Just push them down past it. Yep. That's a great point.
There is one other holster product, kind of a holster, whatever, that I think goes in that category, but I don't think we actually addressed in the article itself, and that is the garment, you know, type holster, like an Under Armour type shirt, you know, a compression.
Under Tech. Yeah, sure.
That sort of thing, right? So either the full-on, you know, spandex type, you know, undergarment type shirt, or the tank top versions as well. So those obviously would be similar to the shoulder or bra holster as well, as far as how they function, how they operate, and really no action required when using those. So what other things, Jacob?
I was thinking next, let's talk about like the traditional IWB system. You were talking like the Uncle Mike. Like the traditional IWB system is to me something that clips onto a belt or a pant. Maybe there's one clip, maybe two clips. And I'm inclined to believe, particularly if there's one clip, that the holster should just be removed before the pants come down. That's probably the safest, simplest, and most tactical, you know, prepared, you know, methodology. But if you're in a situation where that holster is just so difficult to get off and you just can't do it, then I will say that, you know, as you lower the pant, you can keep it in control. And if, especially if you keep the belt tied, then there is a great possibility that you can use your legs to keep your waistband rigid so the firearm continues to be secured. I don't think it's the ideal scenario to do that. I think the ideal scenario is to remove the gun from, or the holster completely from the pant so you can control it and place it. But if it's just way too much work to remove the holster, then I think using your legs to keep the waistband of your pants rigid after you've lowered the pants with your hands is the next best bet.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff there. Brandon, I think you wanted to throw something in there.
You know, I wanted to talk really quickly, you know, about that Under Tech. we talked about, you know, the shirt being kind of, you know, the same thing as a shoulder or bra holster. But the Under Tech that I was familiar with is the boxer shorts.
Yep.
You know, because there's a couple of issues in that. Number one, like, you know, it's your gun's going to slide out if you just drop your shorts.
Yeah.
But if you take the gun out of the shorts, then, I mean, there's no holster, there's no protection, there's no nothing.
Yeah. Challenging for sure. So I've never used the compression shorts like the Under Tech ones. It just hasn't been something I was interested in. I've known people that have, but I've never had the conversation with them, like, as far as like, what do you do? And I think the only thing you could do is just like super, you know, be absolutely mindful of, you know, muzzle direction and, you know, finger totally off and away from the trigger and, you know, and just being very careful to somehow cradle that in between your legs, in between your pants, something, somehow, keeping it so it's not going to muzzle your feet or your legs or whatever. That's all I can think of. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, yeah, I don't think there's any other option.
I don't think there is either.
Yeah. So, yeah. I've sometimes heard suggestions like, you know, unload your gun, you know, when you go to the bathroom, like, you know, pull the mag out, you know, eject the round. And I'm like, no thanks.
Yeah, that's a lot of manipulation.
Yeah.
It's best just stay away from it.
Plus, I mean, like, just imagine you're that guy in the stall next to Brandon and you're going, ch-ch-ch. I could just imagine Brandon be like, so yo dude, which,
oh hell no, that's it. Nice.
All right, other holster systems that we should discuss or talk about?
Well, I think off-body carry is worthy. I don't have a lot of warm and fuzzy feelings or anything good, positive to say about off-body carry. Maybe that's a different podcast. But if you do use like a purse, a backpack, some off-body system, it's not much of a burden because, you know, you're probably going to hang that thing on the back of the hook of the stall or, you know, set it down or something. But I think just the only takeaway I would add is you do need to think about how to consider it so you still have access to it if you need to draw.
Yeah, make sure you take it with you. You know, don't leave your purse in the cart. In the shopping cart when you go into the restroom.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
You take the purse. Yeah. You know, take the purse with you. You know, don't leave the backpack out front, you know, or whatever. You know, make sure you have it in there with you.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. I mean, totally good point. And the other thing I was going to talk about is the other one that occurred to me is pocket holsters. So if you use a pocket holster today, first off, where do you put your cell phone and keys? But anyway, second off, you know, I think, yeah, leaving the gun in the pocket is going to make it hard to access if you need to draw. And then you also deal with the pants, you know, kind of having a heavy weight hitting the ground. So I think it's best to remove the holster from the pocket prior to sitting down and dropping the pants.
Maybe. I don't know. I've used a pocket holster from time to time. And honestly, I leave it in the pocket. I tend to wear pants that have pretty large pocket openings. You know, but I'm mindful of the fact that, you know, I make sure that I can still access it while it's in the pocket, and I don't think it's that difficult.
And you control it.
So where do you put your
descent.
Keys in your cell phone?
Oh yeah, I mean, to me, it's not that hard to control. I mean, any gun that's going to go in my pocket anyway is not going to. It's, you know, it's going to be like 16 ounces as opposed to, you know, 28 or 30 ounces of a larger, you know, gun, you know. So like we're talking Ruger LCP, you know, really small compact, you know, 380s typically, maybe some of your really small nines, but they're not that heavy. You know, I'm just mindful of, you know, of it, and lower the pants slowly and carefully. And to me, it's not that big of a deal, but you know, I could see some point to what you said, Jacob, as well. But pocket holsters typically don't have a lot of retention, so be super, you know, if you're going to pull it out of the pocket and place it in your lap or whatever, be really mindful of that fact, and that, you know, it could come out of that pocket holster, you know, fairly easily and quickly.
Yeah, good point.
So, hey, you know, I had a thought that kind of crossed my mind, kind of relating to this, you know, so we're talking about different holster systems, and I think we're probably reserving a little bit of time to come back to one system that I think we all quite like and works pretty well for the situation. But I was going to throw out there too, I think some strategy or planning ahead of time before you actually get to the restroom is also important and something to, you know, to be said of. And what I mean by that is I will go out of my way sometimes to find or use public restrooms where it's easier to do this sort of thing, and primarily by that I mean have private privacy. So if I'm familiar with a location that has, you know, where I know that they have like a men's room and a ladies room and like a single occupancy, right? So you go in, you lock the door, you have it all to yourself. That's a beautiful thing. And I've been known, and I'll admit, to use the family restrooms even by myself. You know, at a Walmart or something, and maybe I've gotten a dirty look or two, but I don't care because my viewpoint there is that it's safer for me and it's safer for everybody else around me that I'm using that family restroom, so I have complete privacy and can be, you know, just I've got extra room to work with. It's just safer, I think. So, you know, give some thought, plan ahead. If you can. I mean, obviously there's those times and situations, and Brandon probably has them more than others, where you just got to go, man. But I definitely try to be thinking about that and go out of my way to an extent sometimes to, you know, find restroom facilities that accommodate the fact that I'm carrying concealed a little bit easier.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I think also, you know, when you are in the, you know, stalls situation, Brandon mentioned this briefly, I don't know if anyone picked up on it, but he said he was in the last stall.
Oh, yes.
Having one neighbor versus two is not only, you know, good security protocol, but it also, you know, it's just generally going to put you in a situation, yep, where you have less to worry about.
I did pick up on that, and that's definitely, that describes me as well, and I've probably gotten a dirty look or two from using the handicap stall more than a few times as well, but it's like, you know, once again.
Dude, if somebody rolls in and I'm in the handicap stall, I will finish and relocate.
Oh, sure.
But that has yet, I have yet to see anybody in with all the time that I spend, like for as many speeding tickets as Jacob gets, I spend a heck of a lot of time in a public restroom.
You know, I was thinking, like, I don't think I've ever had a situation, and not to say it couldn't happen, where I was in that last stall and somebody actually came in a wheelchair. You know, like I haven't had it happen, but yeah. I suppose
if that ever happens, I will immediately pause and relocate.
Sure. Good thinking. Good thoughts.
Yeah. Valid.
So, all right.
Yeah,
so
let's talk real quickly. And Riley, I'd like to have, you know, hear your thoughts on this, but what role does a decent concealed carry or tactical belt play in this whole conversation? Cause I think it's something we don't dare neglect to talk about.
Yeah. you know, good belt is an absolute must. I think anytime you carry concealed or carry a gun, period, you got a gun, you got a holster, even if it's the Brave Response holster, which doesn't necessarily rely or depend upon a belt, I still would always use a high quality gun belt, essentially. Gun belt quality type sort of thing, right? And I know, Jacob, you're a big believer in this now. You got an awesome belt. I'm still waiting to get my hands on one of those now. I can't remember what the brand was, but it looked like a pretty sweet belt to me.
Wilderness Tactical.
Right, cool.
Can we put a link in the show notes?
It's been his, it's been his pick before, too. So, yeah.
I mean, it's a cool belt. It's
totally
cool.
So
it's the bomb.
It's very important. I mean, like, if you got a good belt, it makes a world of difference. Like, you're a cheap belt. As soon as you undo your pants and you're getting ready to do your bit, like as soon as that tension is released, everything just wants to flop. But like a good, firm, solid, thick, heavy belt will be a little more rigid and a little more, it'll hold its shape and form a little bit better and help too with the pants holding their shape and form as well.
Exactly. Sorry, I just have my bathroom humor. Everything wants to flop, but phrasing. We're talking about bathrooms. I got bathroom humor, and I apologize. I'm 12 years old.
This is quickly becoming a one of those episodes. It's not as good as episode 28 where we interviewed Daryl Sarter. We're going to be propping Daryl forever. He's a stud. That was so good. And by the way, go listen to episode 28 if you haven't done so already. There you go. So, you know, this is becoming, though, a fun episode just because of the humor. You know, here's one other thing. We've already kind of touched on it and talked about it, but let me just address it directly. Leaving the gun in the bathroom, I mean, you shared a story, Brandon, where that happened. Somebody did that, and you discovered it. That's pretty crazy. You just can't have that happen. You can't allow it to happen. That's why we talk about the importance of maintaining control of the weapon. If you're maintaining control of the weapon the whole time you're using the restroom, then you're more likely to not forget it. And along with that is just consistency in practice and you know, in what you do. If you're being consistent.
Well, I mean, if you're going to have a firearm, like it becomes your responsibility to make sure that you always have control.
Yep, exactly.
Like, period. And, you know, there's no firearms training in the entire world that ever talks about not maintaining 100% control of your firearm at all times that you have it, no matter what it is that you're doing.
Yep.
May 2013, loaded gun found in the bathroom stall at Mayfair Mall. June 2013, state police investigating a trooper who left his handgun in a park bathroom.
That's pretty bad.
July 2014, someone left a loaded gun in a Walmart bathroom. August 2015, gun found in bathroom by 4-year-old child. Jeez. January 2015, Capitol Police leaves a gun in his bathroom, in the bathroom. March 2016, a janitor is charged in the theft of a pilot's gun at Philly International Airport. Left in a bathroom. And April 2016, this is probably the most recent one, gun found in bathroom at Painesville High School. Probably not a legal gun owner who left it in there, nonetheless.
Wow. That's a lot of examples right there. So, folks, obviously it happens. It happens more often than you'd probably think. And thus, beware, take care, maintain control, keep it close. And get into a habit. Like I just follow the same procedure every time I do it now. You're less likely to forget a gun when you just do the same thing the same way every time. And we've obviously harped and talked about that very principle and concept a number of times in past episodes, as it is with any training, right? So
here. So a last just shout out to the Brave Response holster here, and then we can talk about it. But I remember when Brandon kept teasing me, he keeps claiming to me that he's designing some holster, and I don't know anything about it. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know what it does. He says something about it's like it's going to be like the tuxedo thing, and I'm like, what are you talking about?
Initially, we wanted to call it the Tuxedo Tactical.
Yeah, that sounded cool, and I was like, yeah, whatever it is, Brandon, like whatever you say, dude. Like I had no idea what this thing looked like, and I remember one day I was like, Brandon, just explain to me what the crap your holster is, and he's like, dude. The first time you're wearing this holster, and you go to take a public dump, oh man, this is gonna change your world forever. And that was his, like, that was his sell. Like, that was the sales pitch from Brandon. Like, of all the things he could have said about this damn holster, the only thing he wanted to tell me about it is that it was going to change my world the first time I took a dump in the public bathroom.
That's awesome. How come that's not in our, sales pitch when we try to sell these things a little, more often?
Maybe we should.
I'll make a video.
Will you be the model, Brandon?
Yeah, I hate being the model, but I'll do it.
Today's episode is sponsored by a special product, and because we have the creator of that product on the line on this episode with us today, I'm going to turn it over to you, Brandon.
Awesome. I will take it. Today's episode is sponsored by the Brave Response Holster. It is the holster that will fit any semi-automatic on the market and most concealed carry revolvers. It is the holster that it doesn't matter what you're wearing or if you're wearing anything at all, you can still carry a concealed firearm in up to 3 extra magazines. It is the holster that is the perfect, beautiful marriage of kydex and leather and the comfort of belly band, married together, had a beautiful child, and they called it the Brave Response Holster. The Brave Response Holster is a holster that represents literally 10 years of my brain and thought process and so many hours of energy and tens of thousands of dollars of my own personal money that I invested because I believed in it. We took this thing. We had this idea where it was like, you know what? I hate leather because it's so hot and sweaty, but like, it's so functional because it holds the gun in a forward cant and it's so awesome. But like, you know what? When was the last time that I carried an extra magazine? Well, if I carry an extra magazine on my weak side, then man, I've got to wear like a 54 size pant. How do we solve these problems? And we sat down and we solved these problems. And right now it's called the Brave Response Holster. All your guns, all your uniforms, one solution.
Well, there you have it, folks.
There you go.
I might just throw in there that we recognize Brave Response Holster may not be for everybody. Occasionally we get people.
It's not. I will tell you that the Brave Response Holster is not the end-all, be-all solution for every concealed weapons permit holder out there. It absolutely is not.
And it isn't my 100% solution either, but it gets used a lot. And I use still some other solutions. The point is, it does address some really great, challenging problems, does so very well. And the biggest thing of all, it is, I will claim this very easily, emphatically, in fact, it is the most comfortable holster that I own, which is saying a lot because I have quite a few of them. So,
well, I mean, really what our motivation was is we wanted to design something that would just encourage my personal concealed, like I never in a million years thought that more than 100 people would buy this thing. Like, I just wanted to encourage my personal concealed weapons permit students to carry larger size firearms that have a higher capacity. Yep. I wanted to make it so that they didn't have to change the size of their pants and they could carry up to 3 extra magazines. And I wanted to make it safe and comfortable and effective and easy to conceal.
But the mag pouches are on the wrong side, Brandon.
Like, with all the emails that we get about guys that want to cross-draw their gun, it boggles me that people can't get the idea of cross-drawing a mag. But like my question to that guy is, okay, well, look at all everybody that you know that concealed carries. How many of them carry a spare magazine right now?
Very few.
Very few, right? And what we found was that if we put the magazine in the space in front of the gun, did you know that it only takes up 15% of the total space that a magazine could take up? Like if a magazine was 100% space, it only takes 15% of the space that a magazine could take up. So it's like, if you're really worried about like fitting a gun and 3 extra magazines, but you don't want to go and buy an entire new wardrobe, let me tell you, the solution is putting a magazine in front of, in that little space where your waistband leaves your waist and goes across the gun. If you just sneak a little magazine in there, or you use the Brave Response holster, then guess what? You don't have to go buy a whole new wardrobe, and you can have a full-size firearm with 15 to 20 round magazine capacity times four.
Yeah. Well, that's well summarized. And so, once again, folks, you heard it directly from the creator, Mr. Brandon Scott, he who sung our theme song here today, and the creator of the Brave Response holster, which is our sponsor of this episode today. Full disclosure, we do sell them. We do make money from them, but we're absolutely happy to do so. Because all of us here at the company, at USA Firearm Training, at Brave Response Shooting, which is really the company that makes and sells the holster, we believe in the product. So, I mean, it's like Brandon said, it's not like the end-all, be-all solution for everything and everybody in every situation, but it is a pretty dang good holster. So check it out. You can find it on our website, usafirearmtraining.com/shop, or actually /Brave Response. I think we got a direct link that'll take you there as well. But you'll find it in our store there. I think it's the very first item that pops up in the store. And we sell quite a few of them. Lately, we've been selling a lot.
We have been selling.
Brandon has been tasked with.
I just want to thank
keeping up with it.
Any listeners here, I talked to a particular listener in Georgia that he had a bunch of great questions and some truly priceless feedback for me about the holster and what he liked about it and what he thought could be improved. And number one, I just want to thank everybody that gives us a shot and tries it out. Even the guys that return it, like, we get so much valuable information from you guys. We've got some stuff coming up that, we hear you and we're going to respond to that.
Yep. Brandon is busy working on it, on a lot of stuff, actually. I don't think you ever have really a quiet or dull moment, as you're constantly like, I know your mind is just always going with stuff, with ideas and products and so forth.
It's crazy. It's my, like, I never knew that this is like, to get a little sentimental, like, I'm the happiest I've ever been in my entire life. And it's because of the listeners of this podcast, the guys that try out the holster. And, it's just a dream come true to be able to have something that so many people see the vision, catch the vision, and the feedback that we get, the people that are just ranting and raving. It's just like, I wonder, my 1.5-year-old daughter, when she goes off to college and creates some massive enterprise that just kicks everything else's butt, I wonder which I'll be more proud of.
Nice. So, speaking of products, we always do a pick of the week. Jacob, you've been quiet for a moment or two, so I'll pick on you first. What's your pick this week?
I just got a new desk in my office. Riley knows it well because he spent half his day helping me assemble it and move it. And I need some coasters because I don't want to mess with the wood, and I always have something to drink right here, like a big cup of water or something. So anyway, I went online to find some gun guy enthusiast coasters. I found these 12-gauge shotgun coasters on Amazon, so I just ordered these. They look pretty good. The reviews look good. Pretty excited. Links in the notes.
Nice. It really is your pick of the week. You just picked it.
Nice. Yes, quite literally.
Nice. Brandon, how about your pick this week, sir?
My pick of the week is my go-to buddy that's never too far out of reach. This Christmas, my brother, he works in retail, and so he got a screaming deal on a Benchmade Infidel. It's one of these auto-opening knives that they make. And good night. I use this thing for just everything, and I just love the heck out of it. My favorite thing is handing it to my wife or my mother when they need a knife, and watching them cringe as they try to open and close it. It's just brings, I don't know why, it brings me just like this terrible, I'm definitely going to hell because it just makes me laugh so.
Oh, that's a sweet knife. Good pick. My pick this week is going to be the Caldwell G3 Electronic Hearing Protectors. I've had this particular set of electronic hearing protection for 5-6 years now, probably at least. They're still going strong. They work great. Definitely am a big believer, of course, in protecting your ears. I was dumb when I was a kid. I did a lot of shooting, especially with one of my favorite guns of all time, which I sadly do not have anymore. An old Winchester. Actually, excuse me. I had a Winchester too, but my favorite for a long time was my Marlin 30-30 lever action, and I shot that sucker all the time, not protecting my ears.
That's a cool gun.
And anyway, protect your ears. Try out the Caldwell G3 electronic hearing protectors. We sell on our website now. Jacob, we just got that product added to the store. We have a few other options too. Good options. We got some lower priced options. We got some, you know, a little bit higher priced options. So find it for sale on our store. Coming up next, Brandon, let's just switch things up a little bit again here. Brandon, what's your up next, buddy?
You know, I teased it a little bit just a moment ago, but like, should I drop a bombshell right now to our podcast listeners, or should I wait?
It's up to you, man.
How confident do you feel?
I feel pretty confident, man. So the next, we're working on, we're about to release Weekside Mag Pouches. And so,
there's a load off my chest.
Right. I mean, you know, like I said, like we would be nothing if we weren't for all the great, if it weren't for all the great feedback that we get from people that love our holster and from people that hate our guts. Like, it's so valuable. Like, you know, like if you look on Facebook, like the one of the number one comments is like, the mags are on the wrong side. You know, that's why Riley was teasing me about that. But it's like, you know, if you don't get it, great. Here's a weak side mag pouch that's going to, you know, incorporate with the holster. And we're going to do some cool things with it, some versatile things with it. So get excited about that. And then we have a second holster follow-up product for those of you guys that are interested in cross-draw, those of you guys that are appendix carriers, those of you guys that want to do all kinds of we've gotten photos of guys that carry that using the Brave Response holster in some of the most interesting and creative ways I've ever seen. And we have a product that we are so close to being ready to release. That's just going to make it so that every single one of those guys is going to get exactly what they want out of a holster.
Pretty exciting.
So we're super stoked. We're working on safes, man. We're working on holsters. Like, we got all kinds of fun stuff coming down the pipe.
And you heard it here first on the podcast. I mean, this is
true.
People that listen to this, you're our loyal listeners. We thank you. So here you go.
Start emailing me if you want to be
on
the list.
Little insider information about some products in development by Brandon and Brave Response Shooting. I'm looking forward to it. You're going to send me something to demo, right, and try out?
Absolutely. Okay. I've got six demos coming.
Sweet.
Those of you guys that two customers in particular, you know who you are, that are going to be getting demos, and they've called in, they've emailed, they've given us some just literally priceless feedback, and it's like, those are the guys that we want on our team. Those are the guys that we want testing this thing out. So we're going to get a bunch of prototypes. We're going to test them for maybe 2-3 weeks, and then we're going to figure out the changes, finish it, and release
it. Very exciting. Jacob?
Well, my up next is not nearly as exciting, but tonight, and by tonight, it will have already happened when you're listening to this, but I will be airing on our local NBC affiliate. Got interviewed today by the NBC affiliate about if there's a huge influx in demand for firearm training given the recent events in Orlando.
Yep. And then
we've
been contacted this last week, the local NBC affiliate news station, Denver Post. We had an article published by one of their reporters. They actually interviewed me. That was fun and interesting. And then I think you said the Colorado Public Radio, somebody called you today. So, wow.
Yeah, that was we're doing a phone interview this morning for those
behind
guys.
Behind enemy lines.
You've been busy, buddy. Speaking of busy, I've been busy. Yeah, in the beginning of the episode, I said, Jacob said, Riley is the guy who is absolutely sick and tired of looking at his computer screen. That's because I've been spending like every waking moment editing the American Gun Law course, and boy, I'm getting so close. And by the way, tomorrow, and we're recording this on June 24th to be released on June 29th, tomorrow is the regional portion of the American Marksman Competition. Wish me luck. I hope to represent and do well.
Good luck, man.
Get it done.
That's going
to
be awesome.
Yeah, thanks. So, as always, we would love to encourage you, our listeners, to subscribe to the podcast. What are you thinking? If you're not subscribed, if you're listening to us on the computer, hey, you know, that's fine, but that is so, like, 2000s, early 2000s. Go get subscribed. You have a mobile device. I just about guarantee it. You got a tablet, you got a phone, whatever. Go to usafarmtraining.com/subscribe-to-podcast, where you can find helpful tutorial videos that Jacob, who is an avid Android user, and Riley, who is an avid iPhone and Apple product user, we put together these tutorials to help you figure out how to subscribe. We did that because we know a lot of our listeners are probably like maybe not even necessarily podcast listeners or super tech savvy, although some of you are, which we really appreciate. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you know where we are, social pages. Go follow us there. It's a great way of also communicating with us, sending us messages. You can also always contact us at usafirearmtraining.com/contact. And we would love to hear a podcast review mentioned on the podcast. And just because I promised it last episode. So this week, we really want to thank OneChosen2 is the username, who said, highly recommended for all CCWers, with a smiley face.
Nice.
Yeah. He obviously listens to the podcast. Anyone wanting to stay current with gun laws, relevant national news, self-defense, do's and do nots, tactics, training, and gear, look no further. I like podcasts, and this is a good one. I'm just getting into this, and I've learned so much already. Thanks, guys. So thank you, OneChosen2. We so appreciate the listen and the review. Folks,
that's a great review.
Yeah. And we really hope that you'll continue to do that. It so pumps us up and just encourages us to continue putting the show on, you know. And if you look at podcasts, if you follow podcasts, there's so many podcasts out there. They last a few episodes and then they die. Our intent, obviously, is to not die. We plan to be around for the long haul. So there you go.
I promise I will never die.
So we thank you so much for listening this week, guys. And thanks, Brandon, for joining me and Jacob. So last words, Jacob?
Train hard.
I thought you were going to say, watch your six. You've used that one, I think, a time or two. Train hard. True. Good stuff there. Brandon?
Thanks for having me.
And so this is Riley signing off. See you next week on the typical Monday news episode. We
July
hope
4th.
That's I didn't even think about that, guys.
Entire podcast should be the sound of fireworks.
Nice.
Fireworks and gunshots.
Nice.
1 hour of fireworks and gunshots.
I have a special plan.
Oh.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to that. I may not be around for it, though. We'll chat about that. Okay, so we'll see you guys later. Thanks so much. Take care.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.